Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. Today, I have a third generation entrepreneur, disruptive successor in a family business that was started by his great grandfather. Richard Grove is the COO of Wall Control, a family owned and operated brand of wall storage and organization systems, ranging from garage tool storage to kitchen wall organizers and even industrial tool organization systems for industry leading Fortune 100 companies across the globe. Before Wall Control, Richard's career started as an engineer for the Department of Defense. And while he liked being there, he had a calling back to the family business. What began as a small tool and die shop in the late 1960s in Atlanta has grown and evolved over the decades. In the early 2000s, the family started Wall Control out of both a need internally and in the marketplace. Richard, welcome to my show today.
Thank you, Jonathan. It is my pleasure to be here.
Okay.
Thanks for the great introduction.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much. You know, it's always great to have an absolute disruptive successor. And people always say, like, wait, what's a disruptive successor? And if they're the old man that's asking me that question, or the old lady, just to be sort of euphemistic, they'll be like, I don't want someone disrupting my business. But the truth is that young people bring technology into the business that probably didn't exist, like enterprise resource planning type systems. They bring new ideas and thinking. They bring an operating system such as the types of ones that I install in companies. They disrupt maybe some of the old people that maybe don't fit with the new culture of the organization. And they start doing things like putting values and purpose in place, which, you know, sometimes our parents and grandparents think, like, we don't need that. What is that stuff? So it's so great to have you on the show today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and also your family's background and how the two wove together for you to be where you are today?
Perfect. And that is a great intro, the disruptive successor, as to kind of how I played a role coming into Wall Control. So like you mentioned in the intro, we started out as a tool and die shop in the 60s. My grandfather started it, and over the years evolved into manufacturing anything sheet metal stamping we could build tooling for and manufacture. So in right before the early 2000s, we saw a need in our own facility for a tool storage system that was something beyond, you know, your traditional grandfather's press board pegboard with the round holes and, you know, wooden, warped, frayed, you get grease and oil on it, you can't clean it off. It's terrible looking if a customer comes through, and even worse, it's dangerous because if tools, even a little hook falls off and falls in, you know, some of this tooling can cost upwards of $100,000. And you have one little pegboard peg fall in there and get sandwiched in between a die, and you've wrecked that piece of equipment. So you're down all, you know, there's a ton of different reasons why you want your tool storage to be effective for you. And that doesn't even speak to the visualization, knowing something's missing bit of it. So long story short, we realized we needed something better than what we had. And we went to go try to find that something. And we found that it either didn't exist or it was just astronomically expensive, you know, for a small tool and die shop and manufacturing plant. So we were slowing down a little bit. So we we have the capability to, you know, fabricate, laser cut, and kind of form up what we thought might work. So we started prototyping. We did that. And then in the early 2000s, we saw a lot of our work was either going offshore or is going South America. Long story short, it was leaving our building. We had no products that we manufactured that were our own. So we would get a call from a customer and they'd say, hey, you know, no hard feelings. I can do this cheaper in Mexico. We're going to send a truck, pick up our tooling, and, you know, no hard feelings. And so as we started to see that happen, we said, we need something that's going to be, you know, our own product that will keep our tool makers busy, our employees busy, our shop operating. So we went about the business of tooling up and prototyping a scalable product. And that's how Wall Control was formed. And again, that was early 2000s. That was my granddad and my father. And so, you know, they're brilliant tool and die makers, run a tool and die shop amazingly, but their expertise is not in, you know, digital marketing or really marketing of any kind. So, sure. You know, it was, you know, bless their hearts. It was literally, there were handwritten letters, dear big box buyer, take a look what we have. It's, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread. And so,
how did somehow, that go over?
Yeah. Somehow those weren't landing on people's desks.
Right.
So, I was able to come in, again, my background's in engineering, but I saw it as the thing engineering prepared me for was problem solving and pattern recognition. And, bringing that mentality to this, I was quickly able to see, one of the problems we had was just simple SEO, you know, we didn't have a scalable platform and, you know, we had nothing for anybody to find us for. So instead of going out and telling people how great we were, there's already people looking for how great we are. They just can't find us. So my first step was to, kind of reverse engineer the customer base and look at what people were looking for and try to put something in front of them. So, you know, we'd clue in on long-term search terms, that we thought we could be competitive on. And we started there. We had no, you know, pay-per-click budget. It was purely just trying to get organic growth, through SEO. So from there, we were able to get a little bit of traction and get our product in the hands of the end user. And we would start to see what they were doing with it. And a lot of people, you know, we thought it was going to be strictly garage. Oh, yeah, this is perfect having the website.
Yeah, yeah. For those who are watching us on YouTube, I wanted to pull up Richard's site because you could really get an idea of what he's talking about. I think you can visualize those pegboards. We've all seen them in garages. But yeah, this gives you an idea of the stuff they're making at Wall Control. And I'm basically showing hooks and accessories that are still brackets, shelves, bins and cabinets. These are still things that are being made in the back of the shop there by your grandfather at 84 years old is still working 4 days a week.
Exactly. Yes.
Pretty incredible. So
it's amazing. This is actually really good. You pulled this up, Jonathan. If you click on the value kits tab over there, right above you in that drop down.
Yes.
Or you can see it here on the left side there under the, so you see garage, garden, woodworking, craft, hobby. So basically what we did was we really didn't have this value kit section years ago, and right. It was strictly just pegboard and accessories. Mm-hmm. And so what we started seeing, this is a perfect example. We started seeing people using it in their kitchens, and we started looking at the data and, you know, search volumes and found this is something people are looking for. And there's really not a canned solution you can just grab and go with. So we started creating these kits around what we knew people were already looking for versus trying to guess what we thought they wanted.
That's great. And it's great when the customer innovates and tells us how they're using it and you start to adapt and now make kits that point people in that direction, make it so easy. So
exactly. Yes. It's the old adage, the customer is always right. And
yes,
I like to say a lot of people think that means a free meal if you complain, but it doesn't. It means the customer will tell you what they want if you listen to them. And in our case, we saw our customers doing it, but you can take it a step further and just look at search data and, you know, readily available public information and see what your potential customer is saying they want and then land something underneath that versus, you know, trying to guess. Because we've done stuff that flopped. And if we'd actually taken the time and looked, we could have seen it probably wasn't the best thing to get into. It was either way too niche or it was something we thought was niche that was much more competitive. So, yeah.
So I want to shift the conversation a little bit to what I'm showing on the screen here. Again, I'm encouraging people to go on YouTube and watch this so they can see what we're looking at. But if you aren't on YouTube, you can go to wallcontrol.com and check out the site. I'm looking at a page where you have a dozen or two dozen or more brand ambassadors. And these look like people who really live they're living the wall control dream. They're talking about it. They're using it in their lives. And I'm guessing that some of these people are promoting it in their own promotional and marketing materials. Exactly. Tell us a little bit about how you came to find these brand ambassadors. So other people can think maybe about how they might find and use brand ambassadors in their companies.
Exactly. And speaking to disruptive successor, this is another, just a different way of thinking about things. Years ago, we started to be reached out to by, the quote unquote influencer who was looking for free product in exchange for, say, an Instagram or Facebook post. And at face value, having not done that, you say, well, our product line is, it's heavy duty. So it's inherently bulky, expensive to ship and expensive to produce. So, that was a big investment for us to send out, just free products. So, starting to take a chance on that and develop some of these relationships, I quickly saw that it wasn't just about that content that was being created. It was about the community that they were inviting you into. And, nowadays everybody throws around the term influencer, which can be a little bit reductionist. I think because
what do you mean by reductionist?
So it's sort of like, famous for being famous. You're famous because you got a lot of Instagram followers, but what did you do? And so for our partners, they were skilled long before they had the following. So they were skilled makers, woodworkers, fitness professionals. And so they have the following because they had that skill. And so, the cool thing for us is getting our product in their hands. They really know what they're doing and they can really tell the story. And going back to like the value kits, they can find applications that we didn't know existed. So, what I would say to a listener, is that the brand ambassador influencer marketing is far beyond just, products for exposure or pay for exposure. It's more about them inviting you into their community. And then in turn, the big thing is how can you help them grow with your own community? So a mutually supported relationship, will really benefit you long-term. So, as we've been able to grow, we've been able to do more and more for some of these longer term partners that were there when we were just getting started. And you really start to see creative ways to, when you're dealing with people like this, they're really creative and they can show you things that you didn't really think about. And so, one example of a creative, relationship, there's a guy, Adam with Lazy Guy DIY. He's been the OG of partners. We go back a long time. And so, we created a Lazy Guy DIY value kit. So it's like he picked all the accessories, the panels, everything that goes into it. It's geared for woodworkers and it's exactly what he would buy himself and branded it as such. Well, he gets a commission for every unit that we sell. So, it behooves him to promote it. We want to promote it because we know it's a good kit. So, yeah.
I like that type of a relationship where someone is getting their name associated with it and maybe it's marketed. I've seen it, for instance, with there's a famous triathlon athlete in my area, and he's well known for being a vegan, plant protein based diet. And he's connected with some very forward-thinking restaurants that are also vegan, plant-based, and gotten a sandwich or a smoothie or something like that named after him and had his books in there. And they do this cross-promotion. I think that works really well. What I've seen on the flip side, though, is I've seen influencers who think that they bring so much value to a business. A friend of mine has a fashion business, and they're trying to promote their fashions, and the influencers are trying to get free product and free advertising. And yet the question is, what do they really bring? So how do you evaluate brand ambassadors? Let's just dig a little bit deeper. And then we're going to get back to the family business story, folks.
These conversations.
How do you evaluate brand ambassadors to know whether they're worth their weight in salt?
it's not easy, especially for, say, a brand like us. So we sell through we sell direct on our own website. We sell through retailers like Amazon, Home Depot, Lowe's. So like the attribution gets super muddy as it is. And it gets even muddier when you talk about, you know, somebody else's, you know, Instagram channel posting the content. So
right.
What we've tried to do, and it's not easy, but kind of set some benchmarks and see kind of, it's like rising tides lift all ships, seeing what the program overall does. And then trying to splice out like which partner really is more effective than another. And so one thing that we've started doing is we have an affiliate program that integrates with our brand ambassador program. And so the affiliates have their own discount code, their own affiliate link that we can track their traffic and we can see what happens. So the other thing that we'll do is you can kind of get a feel for their engagement. You can't just look at follower count. So, you know, someone could have 100,000 followers and they post something and get 10 likes. That kind of tells you, you know, the engagement's not there. So that big, pretty number might not equate to much ROI. So, you know, it's trial and error too, a lot of times. So okay. You kind of start to get a little bit of a feel for it. But the thing that we found too is, you know, once you find these, you know, and the other thing you can do is you can look in the community and see how involved they are with like the rest of the people in that community. So if they're, you know, very involved and not kind of isolated, it seems like it's more effective because then they share with their other, you know, friends of influence, we'll say.
Yeah. Without naming names, have there been any influencers that have come and asked you for a significant amount of money up front to be connected to them?
Yeah. And fortunately, given our size and the fact that we're blessed to have a lot of requests,
yep.
We have to limit it because it's just not, you know, so that immediately is a red flag to us. If it's like, you know, if somebody's even, and it's especially if it's like, and I understand some of these folks get so big, they need to have someone managing them. But if you're being reached out on behalf of somebody and all it is, you know, their card with their rates, like we know that's probably not going to be a long-term relationship.
Right.
But if it's somebody like, oh my gosh, I'm redoing my little girl's room. I love your system. I've used the best is this. And it's funny because some of the biggest accounts, this is how they start, which you wouldn't think, but I've already bought your stuff on Amazon. I've loved it for years. I want to do, you know, my little girl's room and set up like a at-home learning station or remote learning. Mm-hmm. Would you want to partner up with some product? Like that's a yes. And that's that makes us want to figure out how we can support them even more, like to go beyond their ask and, you know, actually be able to pay something or pay a commission or that kind of thing. So,
my friend has a fashion business and has been approached by influencers who want serious dollars up front to just post on Instagram. And my friend just kind of laughs at it most of the time. Yeah. Like, this is just crazy. Like, who is this person? So obviously data is really important, and having affiliate tracking codes, you can track, you know, the sales that are attributed to an influencer, to other kind of creative partners. And I think that's really important. And so I think that's an interesting segue, because your father and grandfather's 84. Your father is how old?
Late 60s.
Okay.
Yeah.
They probably come from a generation where they didn't have access to this kind of data, and they probably are skeptical about even the value of this data. And you come along as this quote unquote disruptive successor saying, you know, it's all about the data. You're an engineer. So engineers are all about numbers and data, and, you know, that's fact finding. How do you guys converse with each other, you and your grandfather and father, with regard to the data? Do they listen to what you're saying and now understand and start to really buy into it? Is there any, was there resistance early on when you were presenting it to them?
I'll say to their credit, even from day one, I never had a short leash. It was always, there was always a lot of trust there. And, and even now today, I mean, it's real, like, you know, it really is wall control. Like, I operate wall control and then they operate the manufacturing bit of it. And never is there any pushback to any sort of, you know, even large systematic change when it comes to data or technology. So, even if it comes at a large cost, they trust my judgment as to this is actually going to be better in the long run. So, So, I mean,
I want to ask you about that symbiotic relationship because these are two different corporations, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do they sell only exclusively to you, or do they also sell and provide, or do they provide services to other companies outside of your company?
They do. Yeah. So the wall mounted storage is only through us.
Okay.
So yeah. Exclusive. So that would be, they don't make that for anybody else. And Wall Control owns the patents and the IP to anything that applies to that. So we still do manufacture, automotive, you had mentioned in your area, the automotive or aerospace. So we still do all that. Even HVAC, commercial refrigeration, we do a lot of metal stamping in that side of it. But it's not a, and I'll say this too, we wouldn't mind if they were reached out to buy another storage system, because that just puts more of the market share in our manufacturing plant. So mm-hmm.
That's great. So give us a framework, an idea of how big, how many employees are in each of the two companies, so listeners have a sense of the scale of this company.
Yeah. So we're, I'd say right in that small to early mid-tier size. So mm-hmm. Wall Control, we're about 50 to 75, depending on seasonality. And then the manufacturing plant they're probably closer 75 to 100. That's kind of the split there.
This is a great company, a great story. You're in a very specific niche, it seems to me. I've not seen and don't know who your competition is, but what I like is that you seem like you could be a dominant player in a niche like this. And that's great. So let's talk about the family and the business and how it operates. Does your family is the leadership team made up mostly of family members or non-family members? Tell us about how many other family members are in the business. You talked to me about this earlier. Share with our listeners. What's the structure? And what's the structure of some of your meetings? Like, do you have an ownership group that meets? Do you have a board? Do you have a leadership team that's different from the management team? And the interrelationship of the family members in these different groups? Can you talk to us about that, Richard?
Yeah, it's definitely mostly family, and ownership is entirely family. So I would say the structure over at our manufacturing plant, it is my grandfather and my father and my aunt. So my grandfather is more on at this stage, more on the financial side, kind of the ownership structural, that kind of thing would fall under his umbrella. My father would be operational. He runs the shop. I mean, he's the main point there. And then we have non-family who obviously help with that. So we have great shop foremen, production management, that kind of thing. So those are conversations my dad would be having with his team. And then my aunt, she's also on the financial side, accounting, payroll, that kind of thing. So that would be and Wall Control outsources the payroll and financial to the manufacturing plant. They're separate entities, but one accountant kind of thing. So mm-hmm. On the Wall Control side, I have always been pretty much everything operationally. When I came to Wall Control, I was employee number one, and it was me and a guy in a warehouse working together to get things out the door. I mean, that's kind of how it's grown. Now, my brother came on, and he's now basically I'm trying to get more out of the day to day operations and more long-term vision, which I've kind of always done both. But mm-hmm. as the day-to-day operations gets more complex, the more I need support there. My sister just came on in the last year or two. She's doing a great job lining up new accounts, bringing those on board. I have two cousins, my aunt's kids that are working here too. My youngest cousin, I'm the oldest of my grandfather's grandkids. The youngest just started with us. He's a senior at Georgia Tech. So he's done a great job for us bringing in disruptive technology and really enjoying problem solving. He's been great. So, I don't know if that speaks to your question exactly,
it does speak really well to it. I think that there's something really unique and special about your family. And you said it earlier that you were given a long leash and there was a lot of trust. And you seem to speak very highly of your other family members that are in the business. And it keeps expanding. It sounds like there's a dozen or more family members in the business from different generations that are related in different ways. And there seems to be a deep level of trust and a family bond that's very strong, which I think is what is the secret to your success in being a third generation business. I think that there are some family values. I don't know if they're articulated, but I think they're alive and living in your family, and I'm talking about extended family, such that bringing other family members in, putting them into positions where they can be impactful, where they make a contribution, where their contribution is recognized, seems like it's going all so smoothly.
Yeah, and I'd say, it's, we get along very well. I mean, as well as you could expect for that many family trying to operate something. And I'll say, you spoke to it exactly. I'd say at the core, it's trust. And that's what makes, we're not so, I don't know what the word would be, but so full of ourselves to think that every person who's doing their job is the best person that could possibly be doing that job and happens to be family. But what we do know is we have that trust. My brother's not going to leave and go do something else. We're here. We're in this together. We're going to fight it out. And I think that's the bit of it that you can really lean on. On the flip side of it, you're taking a lot of trust when you bring in family, because it's not exactly easy to, it's going to be awkward at Thanksgiving if you fire your nephew or, so there's, it goes both ways, but there is that trust element that you find with family that's hard to reproduce just with kind of cold hiring, I guess.
So. Right. So my other part of that earlier question was around family values, core values in the business, core purpose. These are things I think that make a culture really strong in a company. Has your family sat down? And or the leadership, you, your grandfather, your dad, sat down and talked about, like, what are the core values? And by core values, I'm talking about like operating behaviors. Right. I know, you dealt with the military, there's a strong code of ethics and operating behaviors, and companies need to have that as well, whatever that is. And that might be do the right thing, be professional, respond to all requests within 24 hours, be of service, whatever those are. Have you guys articulated those? And has it helped to cement the culture of your organization and being stronger?
The answer to that would be yes, and not nearly as good as we should have.
Okay,
so
great.
We have that. It has been, and I see that Scaling Up book behind you there. That we've worked with them and helping us to put this stuff together, because you need that in place to scale well. You need something that you can point to on a wall that says this is what we believe in, and if you don't, then this is not going to be a good fit. So we have that, but we need to do a better job of communicating it with our workforce and
so making important.
Because what ends up, especially with COVID, we were fortunate to get a real boom when everybody was locked up at home. Oh, everybody took up a hobby. Everybody bought a bunch of tools. Everybody got into gardening. So
they needed organization of all that stuff.
Exactly. And it's like when that happens, it's kind of a catch-22, because one, you really need that structure as you're trying to hire rapidly and hold people accountable to something they've already agreed to adhere to. But at the same time, you're just trying to get stuff out the door. So some of that stuff starts to fall by the wayside, which makes the scaling harder. So, So we're now in a position we've gone through a lot of changes over the last couple of years, kind of structurally, process wise. And so, now that we have a good handle on demand, volume, and output, I know this year we're going to revisit all these things and really try to drive some of these, infrastructure, cultural infrastructure that we can build on.
So important. Folks, if you're not familiar with the book Scaling Up, I've been a certified Scaling Up coach for 5 years. And you should pick up a copy of Scaling Up by Vern Harnish. and or Gino Wickman's book, Traction, where both of them do a good job of articulating what core values are and the role that they play in the business. I also talk about it in my chapter on purpose in Disruptive Successor. So important to building the culture and making it really sticky so people want to come and stay and they love working there. This is great stuff, Richard. I really like what you've shared. So challenges that you're dealing with in your business. I imagine that your business, like a lot of others, are dealing with supply chain issues. I imagine that you're getting your metal from Asia, China, maybe in particular. I don't know. Talk to me about what the supply chain disruptions have been, how that's impacted your ability to forecast production, sales, et cetera.
Yeah. So we buy premium US-based steel. So
great.
I say that.
Made in America, folks.
Yeah, but we're seeing it back up. You know, when there's a problem on one end, there's a problem on another. You know, so everywhere that has steel is becoming scarce, and steel has absolutely skyrocketed. So while supply is hard, cost is worse for us. Mm. And it's been the biggest challenge, and I would do the same thing if I were them, but trying to get cost increases through to our retail partners. That's been a game of whack-a-mole and something that has to be addressed, but also a distraction to, you know, the growth we want to focus on. You know, so it's been, you know, going back to when COVID first hit, at first it was just, you know, gangbusters, let's get material in, sell, try to keep up with demand. So we're trying to scale up to do that. Then, you know, after that wave passes, then it's the supply chain, material cost, trying to manage that. So I tell people, it feels like every quarter there's some big challenge and it's never the same as the one before. So it's just been fascinating, because used to be it was secure. You know, you have your supply chain, you almost take that for granted because it's so steady. So you get to focus on growth and some of these other things that are, like, you know, more fun and that you should be focusing on. Whereas now we've had to go back into every unit of our business, and everywhere we look, there's a challenge. So buying material, can we buy it? Yeah, yes or no. How expensive is it? Oh, we can't sell it, resell it, because, you know, this cost is so high. Oh, we've got it in, but now we can't, you know, now employee retention is an issue. So, you know, no matter where you look, it's been some new challenge. So we're excited, you know, hopeful that the future will be a little more stable and we can go back to the things that, you know, drive growth versus just keep operations running.
And how has COVID, the pandemic, impacted your business over the last couple of years?
It's been a roller coaster for sure. So yeah. at the very start, we saw a huge pullback, especially from our retail purchasing. It was like everybody was afraid to bring in more material than they needed. They didn't want to have too much stock on hand. Then they realized, whoa, everybody's getting into organizing at home. So then they're buying like crazy. And then we couldn't keep up with that regard. And so then you get into forecasting. It was impossible to figure out what was going to happen quarter to quarter, year over year. So it's now evolved to where I think Q1 of this year is going to be still going to be uniquely different than Q1 of last year. But I think Q2, we're going to start to see some normalcy and get to where we can properly forecast demand, whereas that's been, you know, a moving target to try to hit the last 2 years.
Yeah. Welcome back to the new normal. I imagine it's quite a challenge. You know, one of the jobs of leaders is the ability to predict, and prediction in terms of forecasting financials and materials and costs and all that is just so important. And it's been challenging. And I think people who have successfully gone through this roller coaster and have come out on top have been well conditioned to deal with other challenges, whether it be supply chain interruptions, difficulty in hiring people because we're at a full employment economy and people have good jobs and others are resigning from the jobs they have. Super interesting story. What I love about your story, Richard, is that you started this wall control business as a new iteration out of the tool and die shop. So it was disruptive to, hey, we're not just going to be tool and die. We're now going to make our own branded products, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we're going to develop a B2B and a B2C e-commerce platform, and you did it on a very limited budget. It's truly, you know, the entrepreneurial story here is truly a dream come true. Congratulations.
Thank you. And a fun little tidbit about doing it on a budget. So my dad's mother, my grandma, she just loves to learn, always has. She built our first website that we used probably up until less than 10 years ago. Wow. I mean, straight up custom HTML, you know, it worked fine at the time. I mean, you got to scale and you can't use your grandma's website indefinitely. And we needed, you know, it didn't have the API plugin capabilities and such we needed, but yeah, just going back to like bootstrapping it, just everything was homemade. All of our trade show booths were homemade out of the gate. Me and my dad drove to Las Vegas for the National Hardware Show.
I bet they were great, by the way, because I bet you they really showcased your work. They probably were all made out of like, you know, metal stamped kind of like a trade show booth that stood out like a sore thumb maybe, but it got the attention that you needed to get. And people were like, wait, what is this? Who is this? Who are you guys? What do you make? And it was so obvious when they walked into the booth, and I bet you it was a smashing success, I'm guessing.
Yeah, we had, it's funny because going back, they were robust. We'll say that. It took, you know, I'd see people rolling, they'd pop up this display in 10 minutes and walk out to go get dinner. It took us 12 hours, maybe like 16 hours to set this first display up. And while it definitely caught your eye, it was a bit of a sore thumb. It was a little busy. I'll just say it was a little busy, but I wouldn't trade it for anything, but it was definitely, you know, when you're at the, you know, Las Vegas Convention Center at the time and it's midnight and you're the only one in there still setting your booth up, you know, you're wondering, what are we doing out here?
Okay. All right. Little plug for you. You have your own podcast that you're starting. Tell listeners what that's all about and where they'll be able to find you.
Yeah. So it's going to be called, it's the Organization Conversation, and it's going to be hosted on Business Radio X. And basically, it's going to be anything and everything organization. Jonathan, we'd love to have you on.
Can't wait to be on it. Yeah.
So basically, we'll be talking about the obvious organization, the physical organization of getting your space in order. We're going to talk about structural organization, business organization, marketplace organization, anything and everything loosely tied to organization. We want it to be first and foremost about the listener. We want them to get value out of it. And then also about our guests. We want our guests to be able to tell their story and bring value to the listener through that. So, so that's the show and the purpose. And we've kind of started a soft launch. We are not, you know, rolling it out until we get a handful of episodes under our belt, but we should be pushing that pretty heavily come March. So
great. So glad to hear that. And so glad to have you on the show today, Richard. Richard Grove, COO of Wall Control Systems. Folks, if you got some value from this, please share it with others. If you are a family business leader or an owner of a family business and you'd like to join me on the show, please DM me on LinkedIn or send me an email. And also, if you like this show, give us a great review on the podcast, the listening platform of your choice. Thanks so much for listening to our show today. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.